No? You sure? It's going to get complicated. Very, very confusing talk. you can stop me in the middle and we can translate things. The second thing is it's gotten a little bit colder and we've got a spare shawl up here, like a blanket. Must be here somewhere. Can't see it. There it is. Is anyone cold? No? Okay. So again, if you get cold, let me know. So we'll begin with meditation. Let's have 10 minutes together to practice.
I want to... speak this evening, and we'll see how that goes. A little bit about our relationship to time. And, you know, time is a fantastic thing to contemplate. And we're not just going to think about time and inquire into time in a very vague way, but in quite a specific way. And I was actually recently asked, when did you start teaching with Tovana? And I thought, I really don't know. I really can't get a sense. I can't access that piece of information. Probably Zara knows, and she's like desperate to grab the mic and say, you know, what year, month, minute it was and things like this. But for me, all I know is I think it was in the past. I think it was somewhere in the past. And while we were sitting here together, I was actually just thinking, and so is dinner. Dinner's also in the past. There's really only this big chunk of before. Yeah. Now, if you're lucky, you can still perhaps taste a little bit of dinner, yeah, in this moment. But that's not the same as dinner. Dinner really has gone. It's really gone. And there was probably a period of time where you were really looking forward to it, maybe even really enjoying it while it was there, and it's gone. It's gone. And it's gone along with the beautiful meditation you had earlier today and the struggles. Everything gone. It's really gone. Yeah. It's quite beautiful. What we're left with is just now when we contemplate it like that. Yeah. Even that idea of, well, what's to come? What's to come? That can only be thought now. In a certain way, there's a sense, there's really just now. It's always just now. It's always just now. And there's a few ways we can contemplate that that can be quite helpful. One is, how big a deal I made about the struggle that's now gone. When I put it into a wider time frame, I can realize, oh yeah, it passed. And maybe the next time I'm in a struggle, I can just remember, oh yeah, like all the other struggles that I've been through, at some point it'll just be in that room called the past, in that space called the past. Yeah. And we might go back and we might visit it, or we might just let it live there, let it be there. And this kind of has a point, yeah. It has a point in relationship to dukkha, in relationship to stress, distress, reactivity, entanglement, okay? Now, many of you might hear the word dukkha and then say, you know, that means suffering, or the equivalent in Hebrew. And that's fine. Can't hear me now? Yeah. Okay. So you'll get the occasional exhalation through my nostrils now, but I think we can live with it. Oh. Can we? Let's see. Maybe a bit lower than my mouth might be better. No, I seem to breathe there as well. Okay. I don't know which is the improvement. So I was saying it relates to dukkha. Yeah, it relates to the experience of distress, stress. And there are many words that we can actually use to translate dukkha. And there's really a usefulness to having an alive kind of translation. So that it's really relevant to all of our life. And at the same time, we also would like it to you know, be something that we can feel and know and tune into, because it's really the key part of the Dharma teachings. Okay, like if the Dharma teachings are about the liberation of dukkha, and that we're thinking it's only one thing and not something else, that means these teachings start to become quite limited in what they're able to do. Yeah. So I have a definition that I like. But I don't know if you know about like circular reasonings. Like they don't really kind of resolve upon themselves. So these teachings are about getting free from dukkha. And dukkha is the felt sense of not being free. So, in what way do you not feel free? In what way do you not feel free? In what way are your actions expressing that you don't feel free? Yeah. And that's dukkha. That's the experience of dukkha. In what way you don't feel free? Yeah. And I think that we can tune in and we can feel it. It's like, oh yeah. It could be in the way we act. It could be in the way we sense ourselves, our limitations, our range. It could be in what we feel the heart can open to. Yeah. All of this kind of explain dukkha for us. And I think these teachings are inclining us to look at the experience of dukkha, because that's where we get to see the mistaken identity that we give to ourselves or to things. Yeah? And this relates to time. This relates to the time of things. Yeah? And just as I think yesterday Zaha spoke about these, you know, kind of so-called hindrances as doorways. I heard some of you kind of reflecting this back. We could also call them opportunities, yeah. To see that, this is an invitation, such an invitation to a gathering into freedom. The hindrances, so-called hindrances, these doorways, they are manifestations of dukkha, ways that we typically express that we're not free, yeah. Not free to incline towards the beautiful qualities of more volume. Oh yeah, actually I can turn it up. Hey, good idea. Yeah. Very good. So, why didn't we do this before? So we have this possibility and these invitations to practice. And when we tune into them, we can start to see, what am I mistaking as a thing from its own side? And what am I mistaking in terms of what I can do, what I can meet? So the typical way that the teachings are explained, and you'll probably be aware of this, is that the cause of dukkha is the clinging and the craving and all of this, yeah? People come across that before? Yeah. And so what you need to do is stop clinging and craving, which most of you have already done. And yet there still seems to be some dukkha around. Yeah. And some of the teachings actually point out some ways that we can really support that. Like, how could I stop pushing, pulling, demanding, you know, getting into arguments with life? If you go right back to some of the earlier teachings, the Buddha describes dukkha as being in an argument with life. And what that means is that we're actually asking for life to do something that it just can't do. Yeah. So if we were asking for dinner to make me happy forever, yeah, and then it ends up in the past very quickly, yeah. So, that didn't work, because now I'm here and dinner's not. How's it going to bring me lasting happiness? And it's not just dinner that has that characteristic. It's everyone, everything. Yeah, all that we contact, all that we get engaged with has this nature to pass. Right?
do you notice that you can only cling on to, only crave after, only demand of things which appear to be fixed things, rigid things, solid things? Yeah, does that make sense? You can't grab onto, you can't cling on to something that, you know, if we were to say, oh, it's just, you know, it's like that, has a different nature. What we can do in our daily life is also just notice that sometimes the emotional experiences that come up, yeah, that feel like they're too much, it's too much to bear, there's a dukkha in that, the painfulness of our experience, also has built up and become something quite solid, quite rigid, quite fixed. Yeah. There's actually a very small shift that we can make in those experiences. Something that feels too much, if we just practice with like what we said on the first day, just adjusting the dial a little bit and just saying, actually it's just a lot. It's a lot. I don't know if you can hear the difference between it's too much or it's a lot. Yeah. If you're in that experience, I think you'll really know the difference. Yeah, it's like, oh, this is a lot. This is a lot. But saying it's too much fixes it, makes it more rigid, makes it more solid, and actually can lead to being quite overwhelming. The Dharma many times is actually working in just making a little bit of space in our experience. Just a little bit of space. I don't know if this is a common word, but I call this the wriggle room. You know? Like it's just enough room to wriggle. Just enough room to move a little bit. And it's, oh, that is such a relief. Yeah. Because one of the good words I find for dukkha is this entanglement. We get entangled in our experience. We brought out a lot of microphones recently. They're all entangled with each other. You know, so it takes this time, pulling them apart. And sometimes the knots are really tightly tied. Yeah. But if we're patient, if we're soft, it's like trying gently, untangle the tangle of our experience. Yeah. Things build up. They get enmeshed. They feel complex. They feel real, they feel solid, they become rigid. And we can actually start to apply a view, apply a way of looking at our experience that actually sees nothing can be fixed. Actually, nothing can be fixed. Only in our mind can we imagine that it's fixed. You know this quality with light, that it's both a wave and a particle? Have you heard this thing? Is light a wave or is it a particle? That is kind of like mystery of science and quantum mechanics and all this kind of thing. And you can do an experiment where, I think they call it the slit experiment, you can fire light through, and if you look at it, it appears to kind of pass through as both a wave and a particle at the same time. And yet on one hand, you measure it one way, it looks like a wave. It behaves like a wave, like waves in the ocean. In another way, it behaves like a particle. You know, it's just like, boom, it's a one singular thing. There isn't really a proper way, perhaps, to describe what light is. Because we would need to think, well, it's either a wave or it's a particle. How could something be both? Like a wave that's particling, it's a particle that's waving, I don't know. So no way to really conceive of it. And this kind of is something that we can move into with our experience, is that I think we tend to think of things as if they're particles. Yeah, I am a particle over here talking, and you're a bunch of particles over there listening. But all of us particles were made up of lots and lots of more particles. But we could actually shift that view a little bit. And what if we just imagine that we're a wave and not a particle? And that everything we know is a wave and not a particle? And I'll explain a little bit more why that might be helpful and not just like, you know, something to talk about. What actually happens to us when we see our thoughts as waves? When we see our emotions as waves? When we see the whole day as actually a wave? Yeah, we're just riding, smoothly moving through the experience, yeah, as if it's a wave. So when we talk about playing with the view of something, you know, it's kind of helpful to bring it back to the core principle of, you know, getting to a right view about things. And so what I'm saying now is not a right view about things. It's a view about things. Okay? And it sits within right view. So right view says everything is dependently arising, and it depends on the view. Okay? So we're not looking for the correct view that is in opposition to the wrong view. Just as if a scientist were to say, I have discovered it's a particle, because I just did the experiment and it behaved like a particle. And then someone else turns up and says, you're wrong, because I did the experiment and it appeared like a wave. And is there some space where we can both be right? Is there some way that we can say, depending on how we look at it, it appears a different way? Is a thought a thing, or is actually a thought a wave? Then the question for us becomes, what's the helpful view that starts to support freedom? What's the helpful view that starts to support freedom? And I get the feeling that the wave view actually might be just the thing some of us need. This mic is crazy. Listening to yourself breathe is a particular kind of dukkha. Very nice. So you may have noticed that the breath is a wave. Yeah. Breath very much feels like a thing, but isn't it really like when you sit on the beach and the wave comes up and the wave goes back? Yeah. Breath comes in, breath goes out. There's something very soothing for us when we're next to the ocean. You know, maybe that's because we essentially came from the ocean. So being in contact with waves and the wave of our experience can actually have something quite soothing for us. And when we start to notice, actually, all things are waves, or at least we can see them that way, I think it actually opens up the beauty to a lot of our living experience. Yeah. So if you think back, because it's kind of hard to pay attention to a thought, but you notice they kind of start small and then they build up and then they build up and then they and then they go down and then they go down and then they go back to nothingness. Then they go, oh, another one comes up. I'm going to have my moment and up I come. Listen to me. And there I go, off and again. When we see thoughts as waves like this, it's a very different way of relating to them. So, ooh, wave coming up, up, and then wave going back down again. Yeah? You don't need to believe all the stories of every wave that comes. Yeah? You have a different way of relating to the experiences. And of course, you probably also know this is very true of all the sounds that come in and go out. Yeah? And it's also very true of all the physical sensations. You do realize that what you typically might call a physical sensation is actually a gathering together of other smaller physical sensations, yeah, into a thing, and then they disappear again. Okay, so not all waves are as short as I'm describing. Yeah, some of them are longer waves. But there's all kinds of other waves. You know, like the day is a whole wave. Yeah, the sun coming up, the heat building up, moving over, cooling down. All the changes in the atmospheric pressures that come through. And we also, yeah, with our emotions, with our sensations, all of this, everything just waving around. Yeah, being much more kind of free and loose. So, I wanted to say all of that before I think saying the word anicca. Have I already said the word anicca? No. So many of you will also know this word, anicca. And much like, you know, dukkha is suffering, anicca is impermanence. At least in English, for many of us, yeah? But actually, I think there's a better word for anicca, and that's inconstancy. Inconstancy. It's not constant. You know, if you have a pitch that's constant, it's always all the time. Nothing is like that, yeah? It's always up and down, smooth and rolling, high, low, yeah, all different. See? It's all a wave. It's all a wave. Yeah? Is there something that appears to us that doesn't have that nature? Is there something that couldn't be seen as a wave? And in seeing it as a wave, might change how we relate to it. Yeah. Do you know this story of King Canute? King Canute and the tide. I think he was Scandinavian, right? Does anyone know King Canute? No, you don't know King Canute? Danish? Yeah, thank you. And so obviously a king. Wasn't his name. He wasn't King Canute. He really was the king. And he one time took his the court of the king down to the ocean. And some people tell the story that he said, "Watch me stop the sea coming in. Yeah, I will stop the tide." And he stands there and says, "Don't come in." And then it, you know, soaks him and his feet get wet. But apparently the correct way of telling the story is he wanted to point out to them that he wasn't godly. He was just another element in the world. Yeah. You can't stop the tide. But I think the more supportive thing for us is to actually say, do you know how you can't grab a wave? Yeah. You can't go into the ocean, take a wave home with you, put it in a bucket. Like, see the wave that almost hit me? You know, and that's a bucket of water. No, there's a wave. Oh, yeah. Where's the wave gone? Where's the wave gone? You can't grab a wave. You can't grasp at a wave. You can't cling on to a wave. Yeah? Just get wet hands. I think that's helpful to remember. Yeah? It's a helpful way to remember to let go. But also to let in, to let be. Yeah? And so we can actually develop this into an insightful way of practicing. Saying, this breath is a wave. This sound is a wave. This pain is a wave. Maybe I can get to meet it, get to be with it. Yeah. The fundamental truth of the right view is that nothing exists independent of the way that we view it. And so holding a skillful lens as we look at our experience is really what can bring a lot of freedom. Yeah. Joanna Macy, who's a great teacher of deep ecology, which is a very Buddhist-informed way of seeing our place in the universe of things, would refer to herself as a flow-through. Yeah. She is something with which waves flow through. That's the perception. But all waves are also flowings. They're also flowing throughs, flowing through. Yeah. All the thoughts, feelings, sensations, we can see them. Waves within waves. When we look deeply, we see all of our body sensations, Everyone that you can sense right now could be seen that way. And again, yeah, the sights also, they're actually waves. Yeah. All the light waves that are reaching your eyes. Or are they particles? Are they both? Neither. Yeah. Both, neither. But I think the most essential one for us to play with is the one where we get called into the most, yeah, which is our thoughts, our thinking. It was a very skillful move from the Buddha to talk about the mind, the intellect, the emotions as a sense door of experience. Yeah. Typically we would speak about five senses, yeah, and then the mind just processes the other senses. But when they say, actually, your thinking is a sense door, thoughts are perceived by the intellect. And it's where we live much of the time, in our thinking. And in terms of inconstancy, there is nothing to compare to thinking in terms of inconstancy. You'll probably know the Buddha, he was a really skillful poet. He would make all kinds of skillful comparisons to this and that in the teachings. And if I remember rightly, he kind of put his hands up and said, I can't think of a metaphor, I can't think of an image that actually moves as quickly, is as slippery as thinking. Like, there's no animal that lives that way. Yeah. There's no phenomena in nature that's as quick as thinking. There's nothing that spends most of its time not here than a thought. Yeah, that's what it means. There's nothing that spends most of its time not here than a thought. And when it's here, it's barely here at all. It's so fast. And yet there's possibly nothing that decides more about what I do with my life than a thought. A thought that doesn't even pay rent, doesn't even show up, you know, it doesn't even stick around. It says, hey, go and do that. Yeah. And then later on another thought came, why did you do that? No consistency, completely inconstant thoughts. Seeing them in that moment, yeah. That's part of what means to bring an insightful lens to our experience. Can we see in the moment of the thinking, wow, this is barely here at all. Barely here at all. This waves. There it goes again. And then I want to have it again, so I have to think it again. That becomes this. Oh, I can't sustain it. It keeps disappearing. Keep fading out. So we can bring this in as a practice, yeah? You can do it various ways. We could just remind ourselves, that's a wave. That's a wave. Maybe that changes the perception, yeah? Or we could just remind ourselves, that's inconstant. It won't last. That painful sensation, it's actually just here for a moment. What tends to stick around for longer is our reactivity to it. Reactivity to the thoughts, reactivity to the sounds, reactivity to the emotions. And so this way of looking, it might work for us to just open that little bit of space, open that wriggle room. And we see that it starts to soften, deconstruct the experience of dukkha. The dukkha is dependent on the clinging, the craving, the demanding, the pushing, the pulling. And that is dependent on seeing that there's a something there to push and pull upon. Yeah. When we start to deconstruct the more base materials, the whole thing deconstructs. Yeah. if you can't find a wave to grab onto, what's the dukkha that it depended on going to do? This is what the teachings are suggesting, yeah? And so this can open up more the possibility for gathering into well-being, right? When it supports that letting go. And the letting go we're talking about here is also letting it be, yeah? It's not like, I'm letting go of you, wave, and now can you go? It's like, I'm letting you wave up and wave out. Letting you in, letting you rise, letting you pass. Yeah? Which is metta, yeah? Which is kindness. So there's this gathering, which we talked about as this kind of samadhi kind of quality. We use this word, which is just gathering into well-being. Yeah? Gathering into freedom. So dukkha, the absence of freedom, the teachings, freedom from dukkha. Samadhi, the felt sense of more freedom. Dukkha, the felt sense of not so much freedom. Yeah? And metta kind of just comes in there. As we open, we welcome, we allow things to be, to have their time. Supports that openness. Openness is a kind of wave. Sometimes it shrinks back down to closeness. And then we open again. Like those flowers that open and close through the day. You know, it comes to night time, they close down, open back up. But we can stay open under the stars as well, if we want. So we kind of hinted at this already. We, both of me, that this isn't the ultimate teaching of all things, yeah? This isn't like seeing it as a wave is what it really is. But it could be a useful view, yeah? When the Buddha would teach about anicca, he would say, sabbe sankhara anicca. And what that means is that all formations, all concocted appearances, all things that are taken as things are inconstant. All things that are perceived to be things, yeah, are anicca. All particles are waves. That's not really what he said. Sabbe sankhara. Sankhara is a concocted thing, a thing that is taken as a thing. Taken often as rigid, taken often as fixed or as solid, taken also as existing from its own side in the way that we perceive it. Yeah. All of those things are actually impermanent, inconstant, transient, ephemeral, not as substantial as they appear when we look into them, and as ungraspable as waves when we try and hold on to them or push them away. And what that means is, because they're not existing independently, we can drop in a little bit of wisdom, can drop in a different way of viewing them. And this is no criticism to any of us, but by default, we don't see so well. Yeah. We tend to see things as rigid, as fixed. It takes time. It takes practice to open things out. So just as we can start to adjust our experience through how we breathe, yeah, if there's any way of soothing your experience through how you breathe, that's because things are sankhara. Thought to be things from their own side, but actually can be changed. Our emotions, our thoughts, our sensations all have this nature. So too can the view we take of them. Yeah? So we can drop that in as well. So it's like an additional way of practicing, another way of practicing. No sankhara is independent of the view of it. Does that make sense? I think some of you are just thinking, let me go to bed, man. It's been a long day. I've been covered in waves and waves, and you just keep throwing more waves on me. So the last wave. It's going to be a big wave, isn't it? Let's see if we can bring it in as a practice. To look closely, meet closely our experience and see the wave in it. And see if that does allow us to let things in, to let them be, and to let them go. So let's have a quiet minute with our waves together to close. Anything that seems solid can also be seen as a wave and let through. We'll take some time now for movement until 9 o'clock, and we'll have the chanting in here.